We are quiet together. Like I said, love is patient. Love is kind. We ditch plans to go to a ceremony in Culver City where Love is supposed to get an award because Milo calls from Commerce Casino. 40 trashed a room and they're holding him. Can't Milo take care of it? I ask. And I worry about my business partner, but at the same time, this is what I expect from Hollywood. Love says it's better we go. Why? I ask. Her eyes well with tears.
Because with 40, you have to step in or people get sick of him, she says.
It's a long drive to Commerce. It's ugly in Commerce. It's not glamorous. It's vinyl. I watch Love stay up holding her brother all night. He's a blubbering mess. She tells him it's okay. When he realizes this was the night of her award, she tells him it's okay.
They canceled it, honey bunny, she says.
Her voice is aloe vera.
I didn't miss anything. Try and sleep.
The next morning on the way back to Malibu, I worry that Love is a better person than I am. I am quiet and grumpy and pick a fight about Milo. The fact that he's texting her, that he's at the aisles waiting for us to get home.
Joe, Love says, I can't ever get mad at anyone for needing a break from 40, okay? Milo is here because we need him, because I need him. Please don't be jealous. He's dating a really nice girl named Lorelai right now, and you have nothing to worry about.
I'm not jealous.
Look, she says, 40 is drawn to everything bad. It's like whether it's people or writing or his drugs or anything, you know, he has the worst instincts of anyone. I don't know what's going to happen to him.
I want so badly to tell her that 40 is going to be fine because he's discovered a talented writer. I want to tell her that I am the third twin and that she makes me want to be kind too. I know we'll have to take care of 40. I know he's never going to get by on his own. I know he's insecure and unhappy and negative, and I see the way Love cares for him. Listen, I say. I know you keep putting off going to Phoenix and visiting the charity volunteer coordinators. Why don't you go tonight? I'll hang with 40. Love smiles and texts Milo to go home, and she mounts me when we get back to the aisles. She doesn't wait until we park. She presses on my leg for me to brake, and she attacks me in the car, in the driveway. She thanks me for staying with 40, and I tell her it's no big deal, and she raises her eyebrows.
It's Thursday, she cautions me. It's summer.
Love was right. 40 is demanding and drunk at Matthew McConaughey's, where nobody really wants to say hi to him. He is rude to a bartender who's doing the best she can. I apologize to her when she's on her break, and she says it's
totally cool. Dude, she says, you look spent.
I tell her about 40, and she does that California thing where she waits for her turn to talk and then tells me her name is Monica and she's house-sitting in a place near the aisles and bartending and surfing. She asks me if I surf, and it's a question that offends me, but I don't even get to finish the boring conversation because the other bartender is tapping my shoulder.
Are you the one with the wasted friend?
That's me. And my wasted friend is looking for me. The surfing girl bartender tells me to lighten up.
Try and find the fun, she says. It's like all you can do.
The Californian refusal to accept that sometimes things just fucking suck. Like getting into the car with High 40 and making our next stop an S&M hooker who lives on a ranch up in Topanga. I sit on a couch near Too Many Dogs Barking and try not to listen to him fuck her or call her mommy. It is the darkest, longest night of my life. And knowing that Love has had countless nights like this makes me love her so much more. A lot of girls, they would have left by now. When I have to drag him out of his spider and into his house, his slumbering body is so dense and unresponsive that I worry he might be dead. But he isn't, and something has to change. I need to find a babysitter for this kid. Someone who will put up with his shit, someone mellow and needy. The next day, while he sleeps it off and my girlfriend teaches the children to swim for Love in Phoenix, I prowl the beach looking for the bartender who told me to
find the fun. She's where she said she would be, on all fours, scrubbing her stupid board. She's different when she's off duty, more stripperish, with one of those decorative bandanas wrapped around her head and a necklace glistening around her waist. Her body parts are taut and brown. She is a stereotypical LA girl, and she's too hot for 40, but anyone who gets this dressed up to scrub a surfboard is blank and hungry. She looks over her shoulder constantly. She's perfect. I go to her. I wave. Chapter 27. As Love says, Monica might be the most chill girl in the world, and I'm so glad I recruited her. Monica is unflappable and calm. As Love says, you could punch her in the face and she would just keep smiling. She eases into a relationship with 40 automatically, which means Love and I are off the hook. Monica is super common, with brown hair that is always parted on the left and bangs that fall into her eyes. Bangs she is constantly fingering, licking, pushing aside. I want to take a razor and shave them the fuck off, but I would never do any such thing. Monica is my savior, 40's pacifier. He pets her. He likes her consistency. He tries to talk to me about her open mind in the sack, but I tell him I don't want to know about her lack of nerve endings. I'm still trying to forget what he said last week. You can pee on her, old sport. On her face. Monica is a severe Californian. A Beach Boys kind of girl who smiles all the time and follows 40 around trying to get him to drink coconut water. I picture her alone in the middle of the night cutting her inner thighs. But it's possible that I'm wrong, that some people are just free of demons. She is always exactly the same, and she doesn't bloat or get moody or crave burritos instead of sushi. Everything is chill. And one night we are all nestled on floats in the pool watching a movie outside. This is how it is here. You live in an Esquire spread and you are the star, and Love gasps.
It just hit me, she says. We're friends. You guys, you're Monica and Chandler, and we're Rachel and Ross.
Monica hasn't ever seen a whole episode of Friends, but she says that sounds cool, and 40 says he stopped listening to Love talk about Friends several years ago. And I dive off my float and swim over to Love and let her celebrate her epiphany. Love's parents go off to Europe, and Milo goes off with his Lorelei chick, who lives in Echo Park, and 40 hires a house sitter to cover for Monica, which means she's here all the time. These are the last 4 weeks of summer, and we couple up and do things, big things. We take a helicopter to Catalina, and we hop a jet to Vegas, and we eat in the pool, and we swim in the pool, and Monica brings home veggies from the farmer's market, and Love calls them vegetables, and I wish this was it. Indefinite. But then Robert Frost wasn't fucking around, and there is a new nip in the air. An increasingly noticeable one. The beach isn't quite as densely crowded as it was yesterday, and motherfuckers at Intelligentsia are starting to trickle in wearing scarves. It's a sign. There is change ahead. Our heavenly summer is going to end. The days are getting shorter, and Love is wrapped up in blankets, looking at boots and puppies online, but now there are actual boxes of boots arriving every day, piling up in the kitchen, in the bedroom, on our grass patio. Love tears into the boxes and tries on the boots, but she doesn't wear them, the way she doesn't adopt any actual puppies. She says this is her favorite time of year, when she puts Boys of Summer on all the pantry playlists. I remind her that it's kind of absurd in California, where it's not going to start snowing. She looks at me and tells me I'm getting a little red. She is critical lately. I tell her I already put on lotion and the sun doesn't feel as strong. There's friction between us now that wasn't here a day ago, and I don't know if I'm a summer fling.
Joe, she says, you need to put on more lotion.
I really think I'm okay. She rolls her eyes.
But you're not, she says. The sun stays strong here.
I'm fine, I insist. An hour later, I am a fool. I am crisp and cold and hot and burnt, and my skin has been destroyed. She doesn't say, "I told you so," but she does cross her arms and wear a floppy hat. We move to the shaded area of the pool, and she says if I had put on the lotion, I wouldn't have gotten burned. I did put on the fucking lotion, but clearly someone left it out in the sun, and all the protective power of it was destroyed. I am not going to fight with her. This is the summer of love, and I have to believe in the fall of love, even though it has an ominous tone. I look at 40, asleep in the chair. Monica is inside getting ready, as if you need to get ready to lie by the fucking pool. "Too hard," I say when Love rubs aloe on my red shoulders. "Sorry," she says, and she lightens her touch, but that hurts too, and I flinch. "Joe," she says, "maybe you should do this yourself." I take the bottle. I can't do it myself. I can't reach my back. The thing about a true sunburn is there is no quick fix. I lie on my belly, and Love puts a sheet over me and kisses the back of my head. She says she's going to go change.
Change?
Yeah, she says. I have a meeting.
About your charity? She scruffs my hair.
About a movie.
The one you and 40 were working on? I ask, and I don't like this. But she doesn't have time to change her clothes, or her attitude, or answer my question, because Milo is here, whistling, in a Black Dog Martha's Vineyard t-shirt, and it's like he knows New England is my hate place, where Beck was born, angry and unsolvable, where Amy fooled me with Charlotte and Charles, where Love lost her virginity to Milo, undoable and indelible, a cherry popped on old sand.
"You sick, buddy?"
Milo asks as he hugs my girlfriend.
"He forgot to put on sunblock," Love says. "Also, you're early, Mai."
"Sorry," he says, and he looks at me and winces.
"Hey, you should put some alum on that."
"I did," Love says, "but it's that burn where all you can do is wait."
They're both standing over me, and even though it hurts, I have to tear the sheet away and sit upright on this fucking chair. My own skin burns me, a localized panic attack on my largest organ. "It's not so bad," I say. "What's up, Milo? Where's Lorelai?" "Lorelai's on her way to New York to go to a wedding in the Hamptons," he says. Love nudges him with her foot.
"You should go," she says. "She seems like a good one."
"She is a good one," he says. "And I had every intention of accompanying her. Who doesn't love a Hamptons wedding?"
"Me, fucker." And Milo pulls something out of his pocket. It's a piece of paper folded up into a tiny triangle. He passes it to Love, who takes it and laughs. Milo eye fucks her as if I'm not here. Shameless interloper. And I imagine a pack of black dogs ripping into him, eating him alive. Love unfolds the note, and she is quivering, and I remain invisible.
"Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God."
I take it that's a yes. She runs to him barefoot and straddles him, and he's spinning her around, and I'm sitting here in splitting pain, and somehow 40 is sleeping through all this. I refuse to ask to be let in on the conversation, and Love pats Milo's back, and he puts her down. She comes to me and takes my hands.
"Joe," she says. "Joe, Joe, 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 Joe."
And then she kills me. The news is disgusting. Milo got funding to direct a feature he wrote, and he's going to play the lead opposite Love.
"What's it called?"
"Boots and Puppies," she announces.
"Ah," I say, because I am too shocked to say actual words. All this time, she was searching for news about Milo's movie. She loves boots, and she loves puppies, but she loves Milo's movie more. Milo is the third twin. Smug as fuck. I wonder if he got her first husband thrown in jail. And I wonder if he was in a wetsuit waiting underwater to murder her cancer-stricken doctor husband. 40 is waking up, yawning, going for the vuv. Milo is a bad guy. And wait, Love is an actress. I'm so confused, I say, you're gonna act? Milo lights a cigarette and relocates his wayfarers to the top of his blonde Jufro.
Love is an amazing actress, he says. But she's not for sale, you know? We know she's too good for that, but this is our baby. Boots and Puppies is 95 pages of straight-up sex and conversation. It's gonna change movies. It's a horror movie without any blood. It's about the sanctity of the human heart. It's the kind of stuff they used to make movies about. Barry Stein says it's The Big Chill, only in this case, the dead body is sort of us, you know, as a society.
The level of bullshit. And I look at 40, our movies have plots, but he's on Team Milo. He plays along, and very quickly I know why. 40 says he had no idea that he would be brought on as a producer, and he high-fives Milo. And Milo says the script wouldn't be as good as it is without his insights, and I want to kill everyone, and my skin on top of all this, my skin. Love wraps up in a beach towel as if she needs to cover up suddenly. Already, she is different. Self-conscious. A simpering actress, overthinking her words, pursing her lips. My love sounds like a fucking asshole as she simpers.
Our perfect little baby.
Where are we gonna shoot? 40 asks, clapping his hands. We nabbed a great house in the Springs, Milo says. 40 says nice, and Love is awestruck.
It's real, she says. It's really real.
My skin burns and my heart burns, and the three of them talk more about the movie as if I asked. Milo started writing it when they were at Crossroads. And you can love someone all you want, but you can't go into her past and become a part of her formative years. Boots and Puppies is the baby Love and Milo are gonna make together while I sell old books. Monica appears. Hair blown out, same as ever. Stomach taut, same as ever. 40 tells her the good news, and she is predictably stoked. She and 40 pop two bottles of champagne, and 40 is also stoked for his buddy, and it's a celebration, and I'm relieved that I'm sick. At least I don't have to fake it. Love feels my forehead.
I think you have a fever, baby, she says. Classic sun poisoning. You should go lie down.
Love the girlfriend would want to go with me. Love the actress wants me out of here. 40 offers me some Vicodin, and Milo agrees with Love, saying I should get out of the sun. He means that I should get out of this world. Their life. Love is impatient with me, leading the way up the stairs, prattling on about her identity, how she's not an actress-actress, and the movie's not a movie-movie.
It's the kind of story nobody in Hollywood tells anymore, she says. A really small love story.
Love story. Great, I say. She crosses her arms, classic California cold.
You don't seem all that happy for me.
Of course I'm happy for you, but right now mainly I feel like I'm gonna puke. She winces.
Don't hate me, but it would be so great of you to do that in the bathroom, she says. This guy puked in my old bed once and the smell never really went away.
I'm gonna let that one slide. I promised to vomit in the toilet, and she tells me to rest and take a cold shower if I can stand it. She says she'll check on me in a little while when I'm not sick boy, the debilitated obligation upstairs. I listen to her trot down the stairs. A few minutes later, Boots and Puppies arrives in my inbox, a read-only PDF, and the party outside begins, and the first song to start it all is Boys of Summer. I can't read Boots and Puppies in this frame of mind, and I have another new email, a Google alert for a holy fuck no article in the Boston Globe. Everything is falling apart at once, my skin, my life, my love, and I am prostrate on a bed I don't own. I open the link and there's a picture of Dr. Nicky Angevine. Prison agrees with him. His hair is short and he's a little thin but toned. Dr. Nicky tells the reporter that his work as a therapist prepared him for incarceration, bite me, and the article goes into great detail about his ongoing pursuit of an appeal. Dr. Nicky says the authorities have tracked down all his patients except for one man whose name they can't print in the paper for reasons of confidentiality, and fuck me. They're looking for me. Well, they're looking for Danny Fox, the name I used when I went to talk to Dr. Nicky in his beige office and sat on his beige couch. But it's me all the same. I read on. The facts are disturbing. The NYPD cannot locate this former patient. Dr. Nicky tells the paper that patient X was a good kid, a real kid, late 20s. But he also says some cunty shit about me. He says I was obsessed with a young woman. And then I read the worst sentence I have ever read in any newspaper. Dr. Angevine concedes that he is not a detective, but I do wonder, he says, did patient X find me through Guinevere Beck? In my gut, I think he did. Dr. Nicky, the paper can fuck off, he's not a real doctor, he's an MSW, has done pretty well for himself. A lot of his patients are getting together online trying to find patient X, convinced that Dr. Nicky is innocent. His ex-wife is on his side too, telling some bullshit story about how Nicky nurtured tomato plants in their garden upstate and never could have killed someone. Fuck you, wife. And fuck Dr. Patient Confidentiality, because in the 32 comments below, some asshole named Adam Mayweather reveals that patient X went by the name Danny Fox. And this is why you have to kill people. If you don't, they don't learn anything. They just reemerge, more muscled, more manipulative, more hell-bent on taking you down, maneuvering reporters into furthering their agenda. Fucking Boston Globe and fucking Danny Fox, I should have refused to give a last name. I leave the computer and run into the bathroom and splash cold water on my face. I vomit. I stay there slumped. Love comes into the bathroom and kneels down behind me.
Poor sick baby, she says.
Nah, I manage. I'm fine, just a sunburn. How are you?
Is it awful if I say I'm great? She asks.
Her voice is different and I don't like it. There's more Kardashian in there.
I just feel like yes, you know?
Yeah, I say. And this is how summer love crumples, how it deflates like a helium balloon in a hospital. She kisses the back of my head, then retreats. She says she doesn't want to get sick, as if I'm contagious, as if you can catch a fucking sunburn.
You have to feel better by tomorrow, she says. There's a tribute to Henderson at the UCB, and we have to get people hyped on boots and puppies. Do you feel like you'll be better by then?
My girlfriend Love would have wanted me to feel better because generally, if you love someone, that's what you want. But actress Love is like the fashionable cunt Andrea who drinks the Kool-Aid and the Devil Wears Prada. I don't like this new Love.
Do you feel like you'll be better by then?
Fuck that question. Fuck the way she's standing in the doorway instead of stroking my back. I vomit. Chapter 28. I insist on driving to Henderson's memorial. Love fights me. She wants us to have a driver, but I say I want to take my car, and of course I need a car. Oh, there's more good news. Fucking Milo is with us because they're bonding because of boots and puppies. As if they aren't already bonded, as if she didn't lose her virginity to this fucktard sitting with his legs spread in the back seat. They're both back there. As if I'm a Lyft driver. As if I'm the servant, and every time I glance at them in the rearview mirror, his knee is a little bit closer to hers. Monica's riding shotgun. She's psyched. And I can't imagine her enjoying UCB humor, getting any of the jokes. She wears too much makeup, and she's too athletic for the Franklin Village UCB crowd, where the idea is that girls have messy hair and patterned leggings, and long tongues they stick out in pictures for Instagram. I don't miss the village. I don't want to go back. Everything is wrong, and I ask Monica why she didn't ride with 40.
He had to do some stuff, she says. And I needed to get ready.
She always needs to get ready. And 40 had to pick up drugs, and Monica sprays foundation onto her cheeks, and Love bonds with Milo, and the car smells like Monica's makeup. Everything is wrong.
To think of Dr. Nikki amassing an army behind bars in Rikers and me escorting this group to a goddamned Henderson tribute. I crack my window to get a little air, and Love asks me to roll it up.
Hang on, I reply.
Milo chimes in.
Joe, it's really windy back here.
I want to ram this car into a truck.
Hang on, I say, fussing with the button.
I'm good with whatever,
Monica says.
Typical valuable fucking contribution.
Love laughs a new laugh, her actress laugh.
Well, I have fall hair, she giggles. Joe, please shut it now. Your hair does look cute,
Monica rejoices. Monica's hair looks the same as always, and the three of them are in it together now, talking about hair. I finally get the window shut. Love doesn't thank me. She looks at Milo.
You don't think it's too done? I feel like it's an obvious blowout.
I feel like she might have gotten a blowout, Milo responds. Monica nods.
I feel like it could go either way, like you can do that yourself if you follow directions from a lure or something. I can send you some videos.
They're all idiots. And Milo says he's going to do character breakdowns of the characters' favorite books and magazines, and Monica loves the idea. And Love says it will be fun, and I am the quiet one, the silent driver. I may as well be wearing a fucking chauffeur cap. Milo slyly manages to cut Monica out of the conversation by running over the game plan for pimping the movie tonight, and I wish I could think of anything to say to Monica, but she's already taken off into her phone, chatting, and I can't think of a fucking thing to say to her anyway. I'm not gonna survive this ride, and I turn on the radio, and Love asks me to turn it off.
Sure, I say, no problem.
Joe, she says. Are you pissed about something?
Not at all, I say.
Milo. You know you didn't have to drive.
Love.
He insisted. I don't know why.
I like driving. I catch Love's eye in the rear view. She has on so much eyeliner she looks like a stranger. Milo squeezes Love's knee.
It's okay, he says. We all got this. Right, Joe?
I almost want to laugh. But instead I just smile, big and juicy.
You know it, Milo.
We hit traffic and I will not let any of it get to me. Los Angeles is a giant high school cafeteria sometimes and I survived real high school. Surely I can deal with my girlfriend morphing into a mystery bitch and icing me out. It's not like I want to participate in their conversation anyway. The two of them droning on about how sick of Malibu they get every year. How they can't wait to get back to civilization and restaurants and award show seasons and steakhouses and shows at the Roxy and the UCB. But if Monica had manners, she would stop texting and engage with me. She would quell the pervasive atmosphere of rejection overwhelming me in this fucking car, and then maybe if I were lost in conversation with her, Love would get jealous and want to join our conversation. But no, Monica fucking texts. Love and Milo talk, and I interrupt them and tell Love that I have some great pantry playlists, but she says she's going to turn on some Steve Miller Band through her Bluetooth. Why Steve Miller Band? I ask. It seems so random, like someone passionately demanding a grilled chicken sandwich. Nobody laughs at my joke, and Love says she loves grilled chicken sandwiches, and there's a scene in 2012 when Amanda Peet is in a grocery store during an earthquake and the floor splits, and this is how that is. Love is more distant with every eighth of a mile. No wonder the divorce rate in the industry is so high. Soon we pull off and we're on Franklin, and it's the same old gas station, and there is the same old Scientology Celebrity Center, and there is the same old Franklin Village, and Love pouts when I hang a left onto Bronson and drive toward the canyon.
You don't want a valet? She asks.
I'd rather park myself, I say. She huffs.
Look, if you need cash for the valet, I have it.
Milo bites his lip, and if this scene winds up in anything he ever writes, I will kill him. Monica is still ignoring all of us, choosing the people in her phone. I veer into a spot like the scrappy, rough-around-the-edges villager that I am.
Love yelps, overreacting, lurching. Oh, please. Love can't get out of the car fast enough, and I tell Monica it's time to go, and she's confused.
We're here? She asks.
Love smiles at me like I'm a third cousin she hasn't seen in years.
So, she says, you must be excited to reunite with your friends from the neighborhood? Or wait, are they all stuck working?
They wouldn't be into this kind of thing, I say. She links her arm through mine, half-heartedly.
I might be able to get some SRO tickets, she says. That means standing room only.
I pretend to sneeze and pull my arm away. I know what it means, I say. I'm from New York.
Oh, I know, she says. There's no forgetting that.
We walk in silence, and I won't be seeing my four fucking friends. I learned online that they're all pretty busy. Calvin got a DUI, and he's working crazy hours. Harvey Swallows got throat cancer, and he's trying to embrace the humor and the irony. Dez is having a party for his dog, Little D. Delilah is doing on-air coverage for some wannabe Entertainment Tonight kind of show on a network I've never heard of. We are almost at Franklin when Love tugs on my arm.
Are you mad at me or something?
No, I say.
Then why were you such a dick in the car?
Why was I a dick?
Don't make it about a word, she says. You know what I mean.
Love, you're the one being a dick.
Very mature, she says. Look, something is just fucked up and you're shutting down and it's bullshit and I can't take it right now.
So don't. I say.
You're still gonna try and tell me you're not being a dick?
I shrug. Forty's up ahead on the corner, waving to us. She sighs.
I don't have time for this.
For me, I say. This is happening so fast, and her eyeliner looks like war paint.
Joe, she says, this isn't good.
What the fuck does that mean?
It means I have so much pressure on me right now, and you're adding to it instead of helping me.
I'm adding to it, I repeat. I want to throw her over my shoulder, but she doesn't want that anymore. She doesn't want me anymore.
After the show, we need to talk, she says.
And that is how you know it's over. Need is not want. Your girlfriend wants to talk to you, but the girl who doesn't love you just needs to talk to you, and I guess I should have known. She picked me up so quick, so smooth. Now she'll drop me so quick, so smooth. I tell her to go, and she says, whatever, and runs to her brother and Milo, and the three of them start talking boots and puppies. Monica is here now, too late.
What's up?
She asks.
I can't deal with her generic shit right now.
Nothing, I say.
My heart hurts. Cool, she says. I have been so crazy getting ready to jam, you know? My temp agency is not very cool about people going away and stuff. They need to chill.
Where are you going? She is puzzled, but she is always puzzled.
Location, she says, like I should know. Aren't you coming too?
I look at her. I don't know about location. And this is how I know what Love needs to talk to me about. She needs to tell me that it's over, that she's not bringing me to location.
Monica bites her lip. Oops, she says. I assumed Love told you. Forty asked me to go yesterday. Dude, don't get all worked up. Let's have fun.
But I can't have fun. I am too good for this shit. I want to end this first, beat Love to the punch. I want to smash all her fucking tennis rackets into the grass court until they splinter. We spent the whole summer together, and she doesn't even have the decency to not invite me. She doesn't look back as we round the corner, and her new jeans are so tight, I hope she gets a yeast infection. She links arms with Milo, and they greet Seth Rogen and his wife. Air kisses, hugs. She isn't motioning for me to come over. And now I have to have a reunion with Calvin. He has the night off and he's here, hugging me. There's a new small potbelly underneath his Henderson shirt, and I'd like to think that Love is watching me reunite with him, wishing that I would make an introduction, but I know better. Her friends are famous. She doesn't need me. Calvin cracks a tasteless joke about how I hit the jackpot and I don't laugh. Monica checks the time on her Google wristwatch. Calvin grabs her arm. She giggles.
It's a present, she says. I could never, like, get this.
From your boyfriend?
He asks. She nods, but she flirts.
He saw it on Pinterest. He can be really sweet when he wants to be.
Calvin looks at me.
Where's your watch, Joe Bro?
I tell him it's in the shop and he starts to hit on Monica and they're talking surfboards and eBay and it's increasingly obvious they're gonna fuck. There's so much change, too much change, and everything I built is falling apart and Calvin is programming Monica's number into his phone. I should have left when Love said, we need to talk. She is laughing too hard at James Franco's jokes as Milo accepts congratulatory hugs from Justin Long. This is supposed to be a tribute to a dead man, and instead it's a bunch of boy men in moth-eaten t-shirts laughing at their own jokes. Cocky fucks who get paid to make jokes get pussy because they get paid to be funny. I can't breathe. It's time to go inside. I don't sit with actress Love. She's in the important people section, directly across from me with the James Franco people between Milo and 40. Milo is wearing the Four Seas ice cream t-shirt he was wearing the first night at Chateau. I bet they went there after he popped Love's cherry. Everyone around me is going on Insta and Twitter and Vine to share snapshots of the people across from us, the celebs. Monica elbows me.
Grab and pass, she says.
I grab and pass, and it's a single sheet of paper with the lyrics to Coming Up Easy by Paolo Nutini, a hipster Scotsman who fucks models and makes cool music. I look at Monica.
It was Henderson's favorite song, she says. We're all gonna sing along. He made a joke about it once, like he wanted a singing thing. Amazing, right?
It's bullshit. And Henderson's favorite song was either Oh What a Night or Sherry, and I want to tell them they're all wrong. I knew him best because I killed him. His tastes were more in line with middle-aged Americans who drive Buicks and buy Disney vacation packages on Expedia, and I am so sick of this city, everyone pretending to be cool, even in death. The lights go down and the tribute begins with Milo jogging onto the fucking stage. Monica finds Calvin on Facebook and Love claps for Milo on stage. He waves for more applause instead of telling everyone to stop, and Love hoots and everything is ending. I don't know her anymore, and we don't need to talk. I'm not dead or blind. I see her cheering for him, choosing him. This black box cage is real, and I barely recognize her anyway with her hair. It's ending. Our relationship. The applause.
Welcome, friends and fans, Milo begins.
I hate the word fan. It's almost as bad as follower. He raises the sheet of paper with the lyrics.
We're gonna start this night out the right way, he says. The way Henderson would want it. In song.
The screaming. I think my ears are broken. Love laughs at Milo's bad jokes and Monica whispers that Twitter is blowing up. And Love is gonna dump me after the show. She's lost interest in me. She became an actress. Or maybe she was always an actress, like Amy was. Maybe I got stupid the second I got aspirations. I cringe to think of the movies I wrote, the way I jumped into business with 40. Fuck it. Fuck all of it. The house lights flicker, the show's about to start, and Love licks her little lips, the ones that never met my cock. I clench my program. In that book, A General Theory of Love, the good relationships are defined by two chairs side by side. Love and I are facing each other, and yet she is not looking at me. Instead, she's leaning into Milo. Her shoulders are relaxed, and she was probably dying for this moment. She's got her movie. She's got her director. She doesn't need me now. Milo elbows her to look at something in his phone, and she laughs at it, whatever it is. I don't know. I'm too far away.
We need to talk.
No, we don't, love. You want to ice me out and make me sit on the other fucking side of the room while you look in Milo's phone and let him put his hand on your thigh? Fine. Have it your way.
Love takes Milo's hand as she sings along to Coming Up Easy, and I bury my face in my hands. Monica asks what's wrong. Nosebleed, I say.
Yikes, she says. I told Forty his coke is not as good as he thinks it is. Calvin says you guys have a pretty good hookup here.
I'm too depressed to discuss Dez's talent as a drug supplier, and I tell Monica I have to go, and she says,
cool.
And the villagers are irritated as I squeeze by. It's tight as an airplane, and my dick is in all their faces, and when I get outside onto the street, I send Love a text message. I got a nosebleed. I'm gonna go to the pantry and get a coffee. I miss you. I don't know what happened. iMessage relays that the message has been read, but Love doesn't write back. Silence received. That's it. The end. I don't know what I did wrong, but I know what she did wrong. It all goes to hell when they want to be actresses. Chapter 29. I yank the door to La Poubelle. It's cool and dark and fairly empty. Everyone is worshiping Henderson or waiting for the after party at Bird's in honor of his old stomping ground. But at the bar, there is one girl in a band-aid dress nursing a glass of vodka and trying to flirt with the disinterested bartender. I've never wanted a blowjob so bad in my life. Delilah! I call out. She turns. She smiles.
Well, look what the cat dragged in.
She pats the empty seat beside her. I order a vodka double, no mixers, no time for that. Delilah introduces me to the new bartender as her old friend Joe. And this means that Delilah still wants me. I refresh the Google search on Dr. Nikki when she goes to the bathroom. A feminist blogger has picked up the story. She's calling for change.org to remove his petition and go feminists go. They are all horrified at the idea that this murderer, who was in a position to help people, is trying to use a patient as a scapegoat. They think it is misogynistic to speak ill of Guinevere Beck, who was a thriving and intelligent woman, a writer, an MFA candidate, a happy, well-adjusted New York woman. They want Dr. Nikki to shut up. They want his wife to seek counseling. They want the police department to accept that desperate men like Dr. Nikki do things like invent patients named Danny Fox. Thank you, feminists. And fuck you, love. And hello, Delilah. Sidling up to the bar, patting my leg, telling me I look good, tan, smacking her blowjob lips together, unabashedly hungry. I am hard. I smile. You look good, too. If all my suffering has a purpose, and I don't yet know that it does, then the purpose can be boiled down to this. Delilah's vacuum cleaner mouth inhaling my cock on the loading dock in back of the pantry. She said I was weird for wanting it here. It's dirty, it smells like trash. It's a grocery store parking lot, ew. But I know what she likes, and I told her to get on her knees and suck it, and the miracle of life, the sperm reaches the egg, the tennis ball teeters and falls to one side, not the other. Delilah did it. She sucked me the way I like, the way I want. I miss that. I needed that. Love is not all you need. Fuck love. Fuck love. Don't fuck Delilah and I are walking back to my place, and she's grateful to be with me, and I like this better, the way she clings. As we fall in step together, it becomes possible that this could be my life, that it could be one of those classic love, fuck that word, stories where the right girl was upstairs all along. In this quarter-mile trek, Delilah holds on tight to my hand and describes an argument she had at Oak's Gourmet with a guy who was rude to her about asking for ketchup. She is funny, all worked up, and this could be us together. We reach my building, her building, our building. There's a brand new door at Hollywood Lawns.
Yeah,
Delilah says.
Someone got fucked up and fell into the door.
Home trash home. And I unlock the door, and Delilah takes charge and throws me against the wall of mailboxes. She feels my dick underneath my pants. She licks my neck.
Now, she says, I want you inside of me now.
I unlock the door to my apartment and she tears off my shirt and I shred her band-aid dress and this is fucking. Rage mixed with sex and I wonder what set her off and at the same time, I don't care. It works. She wants me and I want her and I need to fuck the love out of my system. I pull on Delilah's hair and I bite her nipples and smack her ass hard and she scratches my back. And this is Hollywood fucking. You can't get mad in Malibu, not really. Delilah salivates over my balls, and she is not a cheater like Love. Love who gets to act in a fucking movie without trying to act. Love who gets to star in a fucking movie without suffering through auditions, without waitressing or striving or watching the Oscars on a futon, burning with desire to be there, spending night after night at the UCB trying to learn, to hone a craft. Fuck Love. I like Delilah, and I try to be a gentleman. I stay in bed with her when it's over. I feign interest. So, how was your summer? I ask. My summer was my summer, she shrugs. Not really any such thing as summer in LA, you know? Only difference is some of the parties are at beach houses. But what a pain, going out to the beach? Ugh, East Coast water is so much better, right? Fuck yes, I say. Delilah may think she didn't have a summer, but she is wrong, she did. There is something more settled about her. Something changed inside of her, and she doesn't seem as tormented. She's like the kitten that got neutered. She's calm. She isn't as sick with aspirations now that she's moonlighting for this pseudo-entertainment tonight show. We lie in my bed, gazing at the ceiling that used to get on my nerves. The bubbling, lowly barricade that once seemed so literal. A roadblock to a higher life. It all doesn't seem as bad as I thought. I forgot how nice it is to be contained. I know the boundaries here. I know what's mine. I don't have to feel like I'm eating someone else's frosted flakes, and I don't have to say thank you all the time. I'm hungry, I say.
Want to order a pizza? Delilah asks.
No. I want to dive under the covers and kiss her thighs, and lick her, and feel her hands in my hair. I do this, and she reacts the way I want her to react. She calls up my name. Her legs shake. She sounds like she's crying and laughing at once. She sounds like an animal, like she found the Afikoman. I am good enough for Delilah. She treats me like her Milo, telling me how great I am, how big I am, how much she missed me. She does not mention her mother, and she does not try to parlay this romp into future meetings, like some desperate ne'er-do-well at a blackjack table, trying to make it all back. She has learned a thing or two, and I could do anything to her in this bed. She gives me her ass, her fingernails, her vigor. Afterward, we order in chicken and french fries, and we watch Hannah and her sisters. I pay for the chicken, and I hold the remote, and we don't need a screening room. We don't need an ocean out the window. We just need my 42-inch TV, my dick, my futon. Delilah scratches my chest.
What's it like?
What's what like?
The Quinn Mansion, she says. I've only seen pictures on Curbed LA. Is there really a bowling alley?
It was the wrong question. I closed the box of chicken. She's supposed to be basking. She's supposed to be fantasizing about our future. She is not supposed to be reporting, and I don't like the way she sits, on her side, elevated, like she's doing yoga, like she's Molly Ringwald in the Breakfast Club, so blasé. She wants to know about love, and I deflect. I tell her that it's complicated, but over, and she wants to know where we met and when. I tell her I don't want to talk about it, and she says she needs it in order to move on, have a fresh start. She says she has been seeing someone this summer, too, and she will tell me anything I want to know about that, and now I remember everything wrong with Delilah, with Franklin Village. And I check my phone. Still nothing from Love, but Monica wrote to say Love got wasted. They all passed out at Milo's house. She says Love is mad at me. I remind Monica that I told Love I was sick. I am waiting for a response from Monica when Delilah starts in again on Love, like a fat kid trying to get another cookie.
Please, she says. I'm a big girl, and this is not about feelings. I just like to know these things. Tell me where you met her. Where does someone like Love Quinn hang out?
She came into the shop, I lie.
Monica texts.
Passing out, everything will be fine. Love is out cold, 40s high as shit, and Milo is...
Her phone must have died because that's it. Delilah prods me. I put my phone down.
What? I ask. The bookstore? She says. You're trying to tell me that Love Quinn came into that bookstore?
Yeah, I say, defensive. She reads. She pulls her hair back and looks away. What's wrong? I ask.
Nothing, she says. It's just that I think you actually met her at Soho House.
I have nothing to hide. I did, I say. I don't know why I'm being weird. I feel weird talking about her to you. She says I don't have to feel weird, and she tells me about the guy she's been seeing, and she can't tell me his name, but he's an actor, and he's someone I would have heard of, and he has something you can't buy with all of Love's money. Her words, not mine.
He's famous, she says. Like, legit famous. And it's good, but sometimes he freaks out and pulls shit like he did tonight and stands me up.
You were waiting for him at La Poo? She nods, and this is why she changed. She didn't evolve, she didn't grow, she didn't forsake her aspirations for a healthier outlook on life. She got some famous dick inside of her, and some famous dick called her back. Between us, we have no money, no fame, no power, no butler, no boxes of Frosted Flakes that just appear without having to go to the grocery store, no elevated lawns under starry skies. Between us, we just have negativity. We both got dumped. Fucked over. I tell her I'm exhausted, and she asks if she can stay. We both check our phones, and we're both still losers. I don't need to be on this futon alone, so I tell her it's fine. We don't spoon. We're both too wounded, and I fall asleep wondering if there will be more angry sex in the morning. When I wake up at 5 a.m., I'm still a loser, and there is no message from Love. I sigh, but as long as I'm here, I could go for another blowjob. I roll over. I'm ready to go, and I reach for Delilah. But she's not here. I rub the sleep out of my eyes and head toward the bathroom, and there she is, in a bra and panties, like some drug-addled victim of human trafficking, hunkered down in my bathroom. And in her hand is a reusable pantry bag. My reusable pantry bag. The one I brought to Henderson's. Chapter 30. Delilah, I say. My heart gets loud in my throat. What the fuck is she doing? She whips her head around.
Joe? She says, her eyes wide. I was looking for toilet paper.
There's a roll on the counter. I step toward her. She cowers. She hunches forward as if she's praying.
Is there?
She asks, nervous, insincere. There is, I say. I don't see how you could have missed it.
Oh, you know, she says. Guys, a lot of the time, you don't have toilet paper.
I don't like the high pitch of her voice, and she turns around and scoots backward, as if she can cover the pantry bag, as if she can backflip into my tub and escape through the drain. She went through my things. She is a self-destructive fiasco of a person. She couldn't just stay in the bed with me. She couldn't be content to suck my dick and cheat on her not-a-boyfriend boyfriend. Nope. Like an addict who loads the syringe even after she knows the batch is bad, that it killed a bunch of people, Delilah got out of my bed and went into my closet where she doesn't belong. She is an addict. And you can't go to rehab for what has stricken her. A star-fucking disorder where she risks her own life and security and happiness to find out what Love Quinn's home looks like. What are you looking for? I ask again. I taunt the cat. I poke the tiger.
Nothing, she says. It's okay.
You said you were looking for toilet paper, I remind her. Dumb girl, can't keep her own story straight. Did you find any toilet paper in there? She stands up.
I think I should go.
I think you should stay.
She stands in front of the pantry bag as if her legs are cover. "Find anything good in there?" I ask.
"Joe?"
she says.
"I am not like that. I was just looking for toilet paper."
"Delilah," I say, "I don't think you're telling the truth." It's always the same with these fucking people. Bad people when they're caught. They try to sell you. In Delilah's case, she actually tells me that she knows people who could make a documentary about all this.
"Like Serial," she pitches, as if this is what I want. "I mean, I'm not going to jump to conclusions about this bag and the way you were at Henderson's and all the way things are adding up, but Joe, this could be very interesting."
"I don't think so," I say.
"Let's just talk about it,"
she says. "Get in the tub." She whimpers.
"Please no, I'm sorry, I'll go."
I point. "Get in the fucking tub." She cries, and I had a feeling this would get loud, and she yammers again.
"I know people,"
she says. "No," I remind her. "You fuck people." I knock her back into the tub, and she falls. I use some of the tape from the bag to seal her mouth shut and tie her arms together. I close the bathroom door and block the doorknob with a chair. I turn on some music, Journey's Greatest Hits, to drown out her muffled cries as I tear the Kandinsky off the wall. She doesn't know art. She doesn't know anything but celebrities, and she is an empty person, a mean person. She will never be happy. She won't stop shooting for the stars, sucking them off, trying to pull them down to her futon, to her chicken bones. I am not going to kill her just because she knows I killed Henderson, because she's crying about it in my bathroom, as if it's the path to freedom. No, I'm also going to kill her because there is no happy ending for a star-fucking girl like Delilah, a girl who actively refuses to embrace her talents, celebrate her insides, lead with her brain. After this famous guy, whoever he is, finishes with her, she'll go tramping for someone else until one day she realizes she's too old to be taken seriously by these motherfucking pricks. And then she'll either spend her savings on surgery, or pop pills, or move away and try to sell her secrets to a publisher. Oh, the sadness of the Angelina with a bank account dwindling, a forehead creasing, a self-esteem level deflating. I wish Delilah were a little more like me. I wish she were more confident. I wish she never stopped believing in herself, like her tattoo. But she did. She thought she needed someone famous in order to feel worthy. She could have settled down with Dez or Calvin or me or any of the guys she met, but she wanted fame more than love. She will never be happy, and really, I'm doing her a favor. She will never find what she's looking for. I pull an orange Rachel Ray knife out of the butcher's block. L.A. kills women. It's a shame that Delilah moved here. She should have gone back to New York. You don't belong here unless you're tough, beautiful, or talented. What I am doing is a kindness, a mercy killing. I am putting her out of her misery. I open the bathroom door and she's cowering in the tub, on her knees. Sad cat. Poor kitten. Her face is a wad of chewed up gum. All the joy is gone. Somewhere along the way, she broke her own heart, and without a heart, you can't get better. I know, I say. I know how sad you are. I know how sick you are. But it's over. Steve Perry's unmistakable voice crescendos and Delilah hyperventilates. She cries and cries, and how badly she needed this. How much more of this there would be for her were she to stay on this long and lonely road ahead. The girl who paid someone to inscribe words on her thigh, words that she could not live by, words she did not understand. The key is not just to continue believing, after all, but the key to life is to believe in something that matters, something big and beautiful, something more profound than fame, money. I grab her extensions, and I smash her head into the tub, and that's it. No more tears. Blood trickles down her forehead. I was right. She isn't beautiful. She was pretty. And I don't feel sorry for her. It's like they say about everything in this world. You can't feel sorry for yourself. A lot of girls, they would have loved to be so pretty.